Good morning and welcome to Focus. I'm David Inge. Glad to have you with us as we begin another week worth of shows here on WILL AM. And if you're watching, we are webcasting this hour of the show this morning on our website, so you can go to will.illinois.edu and have a look at what's going on here in the studio. Glad to have you with us either way. This morning, we have another in a series of conversations that we're doing with candidates who are competing in Illinois' March primary. And we will be talking with candidates for Congress and for the State House. And this morning, here in the studio, we have as our guest Tom Plura. He is a Republican seeking his party's spot on the ballot in the new 51st District of the Illinois State Senate. His opponent in this race is State Representative Chapin Rose. He will be on this program on March 15th, so you'll have the same opportunity to talk with him. A little bit more about our guest. He grew up in Leroy, Illinois. He's a physician and attorney. Also is a farmland owner with land in McLean and DeWitt County. In fact, he lives just north of Leroy on a farm that his father bought half a century ago. He's a graduate of both the University of Illinois College of Medicine and the University of Illinois College of Law, and practices medicine here in our area, and we're pleased that he could be here. We do these shows so that voters, people who live in the new 51st, which is made up of the new 101st and 102nd legislative districts, so it's a big area here, so people who are going to the polls will have some sense who they're voting for. So this is your opportunity to ask questions about whatever issues are most interesting to you. So you can pick up the phone and give us a call, 333-9455. Toll-free 800-222-9455. The email is will-talk@illinois.edu. Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you.
We appreciate it. Just as a general way of starting, and I want to talk specifically about two things for sure, Medicaid and pensions, and I know you want to talk about Medicaid. Clearly, we have some very serious budget problems here in the state of Illinois. Even with the tax increase that was passed last January, we have a serious backlog of unpaid bills, the most underfunded pension system in the nation. And the governor has called for some cuts in a number of areas, closing some facilities and so forth. But we're still a long way from having a good solution to deal with all these problems. So as a general question, how do you approach the financial problem now that we have with the state?
I think there's been a lot of talk about the pension problem, and clearly there is a pension problem in this state. But in my opinion, the Medicaid problem causes the pension program to pale in comparison. By that, I mean, in my opinion, the Medicaid problem is much more imminent, and the system is on the verge of collapse, as the governor said. The pension problem, we don't have to pay that off tomorrow, but we do have to deal with this Medicaid problem.
Well, let's talk about that. As you point out, a lot of people have said that we're headed for a real crisis if we don't do something. And in fact, the governor has said that he wants to cut $2.7 billion from the Medicaid budget. I think people who have looked at this have said, well, essentially you have three ways you can go. You can change the rules to affect eligibility. You can cut the amount of money you pay to providers, or you can cut back on the services that you provide. And the state does provide some things that other states don't. So what would you cut?
Well, I think I'll deal with those in order. Anybody that believes or perceives that we can cut providers' reimbursement any more than is already been cut, I think they're naive and they don't know the system. Whether you're talking about hospitals, nursing homes, or physicians, we're 41st on a state on general aspect of what our reimbursement is. I brought in bills today that haven't been paid to Medicaid providers, physicians, and whatnot, healthcare facilities since last July. It is now the end of February. So we're 7 months late. And to say that we're going to try to cut providers, whether it's a hospital or a nursing home or a doctor, from providing care, you're going to have a revolt, in my opinion. So that's just not an option. I brought in some figures and some numbers on what reimbursement is. For like a Medicaid gallbladder, nationwide, the reimbursement for a provider is in the $2,000 range. Medicare pays $765 and Medicaid pays $699. You can't go much lower than that.
That's to have a gallbladder removed?
Yes. To have your gall, that's a surgical fee.
Just what actually should that cost, or what actually does that cost?
Well, that's just the physician fee.
Oh, okay.
Now that's not the provider fee. I didn't bring that in, and that's a whole different topic. But I'm talking about as far as a physician's fee. A physician would get $699 from the state of Illinois if he takes out a person's gallbladder. Now that's a global fee for the preoperative care, the surgery, and then a 30-day post-operative care. So any care provided during that time, the total fee is $699. A commercial reimbursement, the usual and customary, would be above $2,000. So my point is you can't go much lower than that. I had faxed here a list of comparable states to compare where we stand in relation to the other states, and we're way lower than a lot of the other states.
Okay, so you would say that's a cutting back on what you pay to providers. That's off the table.
Yeah,
so
whether that's
what about the other points, particularly I think the thing that you would probably want to zero in as on the people that are being covered.
Yeah, I think in my opinion, when you look at what has happened in the past 10 years, our Medicaid numbers have tripled. We have gone from 850,000 eligible Medicaid or public aid recipients that qualify for state Medicaid to almost now 3 million people. There's 11.8 million people in the state, and it's a floating number, but it's anywhere from 2.85 to 2.9 million people. So we went from under 850,000 to now in the past 10 years we've over tripled. We're almost 3 million. We have to look at that closely, and we have to be honest with ourselves. And there's plenty of ways to do that.
Well, why did the numbers increase so much?
I think that I am sick and tired of blaming Democrats or Republicans. I think there was a decision to expand coverage, and whether it was merely to get votes or what, but there was Blagojevich believed that he could be the provide all everything to everybody and of course increase votes, because if you're going to provide health care to certain people and they don't have to pay for it, they're going to like that. And Chicago was by far the largest number of people that have increased the eligibility rolls, and I think that was it. I think there was a desire to get more people on there to bolster votes. That's bluntly what I think happened.
So who would you now cut off?
Well,
the rolls
you have, and I brought in today. I mean, I've got it here with me. I've got here is a patient by the last name is, I'm not going to give you the first name because it's all confidential, but I've got the sheets here in front of me, Mr. Warden. Mr. Warden is covered by Blue Cross Blue Shield, but Mr. Warden also is covered by the All Kids program, and the state of Illinois pays this bill. So Mr. Warden receives health care benefit from his employer. He works. He gets, his employer pays Blue Cross Blue Shield, yet the state pays the bill on his health care, because what happens is we have trained our society to hide that Blue Cross card because they're going to owe a copay and deductible there. But if they just pull out their Medicaid card, they don't owe that. And the state doesn't cross-check that. So when they walk into the emergency department or a provider, they know if they pull out their Blue Cross card, they're going to owe 20% of that bill plus a copay and deductible. Could be a couple hundred bucks. Hmm. But if they pull out their Medicaid card, it's all paid for free.
So is this a crime?
No, it's not a crime. It's all legal. It probably you get into the ethical and moral obligations, but it's all legal because our lawmakers have said it's legal. And what they did over the past 10 years, we went from to qualify for Medicaid, you had to be at 135% of the poverty level. There's a federal poverty level determined by the federal government. And that increased to now you can make 300%, and in some cases, depending on how you do the math, it's almost 350% of the federal poverty level and still qualify for the state Medicaid program. Now, so we have people that are covered with full insurance. Their health care employer pays the insurance, but the state is paying the bills. Mm. So the real bad guy in this situation are the insurance companies because they're getting the premium, but then they're making the state of Illinois pay the bill.
Now, I guess it's my understanding that the most of the people that are on Medicaid are pregnant women, children, the elderly, and the disabled. I mean, how many of those people actually also have some kind of additional insurance? I mean, I guess I'm trying to get at the idea of if you did this, if you fix this problem that you're talking about, how much would that reduce the number of people who are on Medicaid? And are you going to be tossing off people truly who truly are poor and who truly need this?
Well, I brought in, I just had my office fax me some numbers. I think there's 40 pages of sheets. Just randomly, I said, can you send me copy who have what it's called dual coverage? Okay. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, in 15 minutes, I got 40 patients here. It's a huge number. I got to tell you, it's an astronomical overall number across the state of Illinois. And so we have to look at this problem, and we've got to solve it. And that's one way, is making the billion-dollar insurance companies own up rather than passing the buck to the state of Illinois, because that's what you've got right now.
So what about this third thing that some people mention? They say, well, there are services that are provided that are not required to be provided by the federal government, so we could save money if we started to cut back on those things.
Absolutely correct. You have a baseline Medicaid mandate from the federal government that says you have to provide X number of services. Call them 1 through 10, okay? Mm-hmm. And then there's another 5 or whatever the number is. I'd have to look it up exactly. Dental care, all kinds of other extras in there. And our state voluntarily exceeds greatly the minimum that we're required by the federal government to provide. And I think, you know, like it or not, we're in a crisis here. We are going to have to look hard and long about whether we can afford to provide these things that aren't required.
So of those things then, as we're out talking about things like hospice care, dental care, in-home care, prescription medicine, which is, I think, the most expensive thing.
Yes.
What of that would you cut?
Well, I think you got to look. You got to make it a means testing. And I think there's no reason not to consider cutting prescription drug benefits for somebody that might make $70,000, okay, or that might have the assets and the wherewithal to pay for their medicines. We have to look at that. And I'm not ashamed to say that if somebody's making $60,000 or $70,000 and they can afford it, then maybe they should have to pay for their medicines because the state is bankrupt.
Our guest in this part of Focus is Tom Plora. He's a physician. He is also running in the new 51st Senate District. He's running for the Republican spot on that ballot. His opponent in the March primary will be State Representative Chapin Rose, and he'll be on the show next month, so you'll have the opportunity to talk with him. Questions here are welcome. We have candidates on the show so that potential voters can talk with them and ask questions about those things that really matter most to you. So this is your chance to do that. 333-9455 here in Champaign-Urbana, toll free, 800-222-9455. And we do have a caller we can bring in here, someone in Urbana. That's line number one. Hello.
Hello. You seem to imply that it would be wise to not cover dental care. I take it you don't think dental care is necessary.
No, I didn't say that at all.
Well, what did you say?
I said I think we need to look at whether providing services that aren't required under the federal government's mandate, whether the state should be providing that. and I also mentioned whether it's drug benefits or whether it's dental care, looking at a means testing. So if somebody makes $70,000, we might look at that person and say, well, you are going to have to pay for your dental care. But if somebody's making $11,000 or $15,000 a year, maybe that person will qualify for Medicaid dental benefits. But we have to look at it long and hard. I never said that dental care wasn't important at all.
But you did imply that it should be considered as something that we should not cover. I would point out that there have been cases in some of the more frugal states that you seem to admire, including, I believe, our neighboring state of Indiana, where children and others have died because they could not get dental care.
I don't believe that, and I think that's an exaggeration.
And you are not very well informed, and I think you probably shouldn't be running for office.
Okay, well, you and I disagree.
Because it did happen, and I could find it in the newspapers if I were given sufficient time, which obviously this morning I do not have.
Sure.
But that is a matter of record.
Sure. You and I disagree on that, sir.
No. You're not representing the facts correctly.
Okay. Well,
another thing, you say $70,000. Well, $70,000isn't that much money today. And most of the people on Medicare aren't receiving $70,000. $40,000 or $50,000 for a person who has severe medical problems is pretty straitened. And as a doctor, although I'm sure you're making several hundred thousand, perhaps you don't quite seem to understand that. I should think you would. But goodbye.
Well, thank you. You know, I worked all day long yesterday, Sunday, down in southern Illinois at a clinic, seeing Medicaid patients, and I'm supposed to go back there today, drive down 3.5 hours. So I've been treating Medicaid patients for 27 years. I've been a doctor since 1984. I'm fully familiar with the Medicaid problem. I think I would probably be the only doctor elected to the state Senate since 1929, when a guy by the name of Walter Finn, who was a physician, was elected last in 1929.
We have another caller here in Urbana. We also have an email here from somebody. Let me do the email, because this is a question that may well be on the minds of some folks. And it's about the College Illinois program, which is a program that was designed to help people save for college for their children. We know the program is in trouble because the cost of college education has gone up so fast. And the person here wants to know, do you have a solution for this problem, which is severely under this program, which is really underfunded? And people have, I think, doubts about its future.
Yeah. Well, I have doubts about its future. When this program was first adopted, we latched on to that personally. My family did. It sounded like a great idea. I think it was oversold. Started putting money in early on for our children. We have four children, and now I hear the state is talking about that it may have to abandon this program. And it's akin or very analogous to the teacher pension program that they're faulting now, and they want to make the people that bought in the bad guy, or they want to make the teachers the bad guy. Well, the bad guy is not the teachers, or the bad guy is not the fact that the people bought these College Illinois things the program can't sustain it now. It was oversold, and probably the state doesn't have any business being in the I'd call it the prophecy taking of what the stock markets are going to do, and I think we're going to have to look at that. But I just like the teachers that have funded their pensions, I don't see how you can talk about not allowing people that bought in and took the risk on that program from continuing in this program. It's a promise.
Mm-hmm. Well, what do you do about that? As a member of the, what does the legislature do about that?
I think the legislature's got to look at cutting off new entrants into the program. I mean, that's first. And that would be akin to the teacher pension program, where you can change the system for new entrants, new teachers maybe coming into the program, that their pension benefit is not going to be what it was for the retired teachers. We have to look at that. I don't know the legality, quite frankly, of saying, well, here's your money back for you people that invested, and oh, we lost some of it, but we're not. You're going to have to pay full boat now for the education, even though we took your money. I think that there'd be some serious legal challenges to that. But I think we got to look long and hard and probably stop that program if it's in a hole.
Yeah. Okay. Let's go back to the phones here. Take another caller. Here again from Urbana, line two. Hello.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
My question is this. I'm going to kind of lay something out for you and then ask how you kind of compare to it. One of the Republicans in Illinois that I can get along with. I am a Democrat, but I have voted on occasion for Tim Johnson at various times, and this is primarily the reason why. I have talked with Tim several times. He's a very open communicator, and I've found myself able to be reached by him and to reach him and talk to him, and I've found him open to concerns that maybe aren't necessarily like a party line. And I'm curious about your stance in situations like that. And what I do mean by that specifically is, how would you rate your ability to compromise, to reach consensus, and to maybe be able to propose things, knowing that you might not get everything, but we would be able to be heading at least in the right direction, work towards a unifying kind of a feel. And hopefully, as Tim has pointed out, to kind of relieve some of the vitriol that's in today's debate topics, consensus, and to kind of reduce the polarization that seems to be so toxic. I'm very curious about your stance on that kind of capability. Like, perhaps even you could just start off by saying, I rate myself this 1 to 10, 10 being very compromising, one saying, I'm a principled person, this is what I do, and I do not compromise. I'd appreciate it to hear what you have to say on that.
All right.
Thank you.
Sure. I think it probably depends most on the issue. If somebody says on abortion, will you compromise on abortion? The answer is no. Okay, I'm not going to change my stance and become a pro-choice when I'm against abortion. Okay. And that's just it depends on the issue. We take you mentioned Tim Johnson and some of the issues that he has taken up that aren't maybe traditionally Republican. I'm a big advocate of our environment as an example. There's a toxic waste landfill that's being proposed over in DeWitt County. I was called by the Republican Party chairman, a guy named Terry Ferguson, and berated me for taking a stance that was a non-traditional Republican stance. He said more of a Democratic stance on that issue. That is something where I don't see any room for any compromise on. If you're going to put PCBs and toxic hazardous waste and jeopardize our Muhammad Aquifer, there's no compromise on that. I'm not going to give in on that, regardless. Again, that's not a traditional Republican view, but I'm probably not a traditional Republican, and he berated me up and down for that. Well, how can you do this? That's a Democratic view. I don't view it that way. As far as compromising, I think the best way to answer that question is the enemy of good is perfect. And what that means is, if you try to get a perfect solution to anything, whether it's a solution to the Medicaid problem or a solution to the pension reform issues, if you think you're going to get perfect, whether you're Democrats or whether you're Republicans, you're going to fail. And that's the enemy of good is trying to be perfect. So yeah, there has to be compromise on things like the Medicaid program. There has to be compromise on pension reform, and we're not going to get anything done. We're at a stalemate. I'm mostly critical of our elected career politicians. I think the system is the problem. That's what I want to change.
We're just getting to the point where we're close to halfway through, and I want to make sure I get into some other areas, but of course people who are listening can call. Let me ask you about the tax hike that was approved by the General Assembly last year. If you had been there in Springfield, would you have voted for that?
No, I wouldn't have. I would have opposed that. I think that our problem isn't a lack of taxation. Our problem is excess spending, and it's these programs that we mandate, whether it's mandated on our local schools, that the local schools have to teach or train their teachers on diabetes or train their teachers on bloodborne pathogens or whatever it is. These are what I call them unfunded mandates. Too many social programs or programs that cost money that aren't being funded. But nevertheless, the tax went through, 67% increase. Now there has to be cuts in spending. And like it or not, we're going to have to deal with it in a big way.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the pension issue, because that seems, and I think in a lot of people's minds, to be the other, in addition to Medicare, the other major thing that has to be dealt with. And there is a legislative committee task force that's expected, I think, to make some recommendations a little bit later on this spring. We have the most underfunded pension system in the country. What do we do about this?
Well, you know, I think the issue is obvious, okay? We need to change the system. We need to come up with a solution, agreeable solution to all parties, all sides, that gets us out of the hole that we're in. The only good thing about this, and I mentioned this earlier, this doesn't have to be done tomorrow or the next day, because not all of our teachers are going to retire tomorrow. Senate Bill 512 has been proposed. I would vote for that bill if I was in there. I think the options, number one, let me say this. I think the teachers have been demonized as some kind of bad guy or gal in this process, and I'm greatly disappointed in that process. At the same time, I think the teachers have to realize that there's got to be changes. What I mean is the teachers put money into this bucket, the pension bucket. And our state, our lawmakers, our career politicians have not funded that bucket. They've used it for other things. They've spent money on other things, and then we went out and borrowed money to put in that bucket. Well, that's not paying an obligation. We just borrowed more money. And we continue to dig ourselves into a hole because we want to do all these other social programs, and now we're demonizing the teachers. And it's not the teachers who didn't keep their end of the bargain. It's the politicians, the career politicians, that they want the votes. They want to be able to say, well, I got this for you, or well, I got that for you, or I got you funds for your local county fair. But to do that, they went and borrowed the money, or they didn't fund the bucket for the teacher pension.
We're going to take a really short break here. We'll talk some more with our guest, Tom Plora, in just a moment. This is Focus.
WILL programs are made possible by Hendrick House, providing housing and food service to University of Illinois students for 64 years. Hendrick House works to ensure a quiet environment for study and relaxation. More information is available at 365-8000 or at hendrickhouse.com.
This is Focus. It's our morning talk program. I'm David Inge. Glad to have you with us listening on WILL AM, or maybe you're watching on our website. It's will.illinois.edu. You go there, you can see the schedule for the program, and you'll know what we'll do in the days ahead. And let me just mention, tomorrow morning in the first part of the show, we'll be talking with Matthew Allender. He's a wildlife veterinarian and epidemiologist. He's also a visiting instructor at the College of Vet Medicine. We'll talk about the relationship between health of wildlife, the health of the ecosystem, and human health. And then tomorrow we'll do some Illinois history as we talk with Gillum Ferguson. He is an attorney attorney and an historian. He's authored a book that takes a look at what was happening in Illinois during the time of the War of 1812. We're here weekday mornings from 10 until noon. We have 10 different topics for you every week. So we try to put a lot of variety into the program. You can see the schedule and listen to past programs by going to our website. Again, it's WILL.illinois.edu. You can also follow us on Twitter at Will Public Media, and you can find us on Facebook. In this hour focus, we're doing a conversation with a candidate. We're having a number of these in the run-up to Illinois' March primary. This morning, we're talking with Tom Plura. He is a physician and attorney. He is a Republican seeking his party's spot on the ballot in the new 51st district of the Illinois State Senate. It's made up of two legislative districts, 101 and 102, and it's a big chunk of east-central Illinois, but does not include all the big cities. So Decatur, Bloomington, Normal, Champaign-Urbana, Danville, they are not in this district. Questions are welcome, 333-9455 and toll-free 800-222-9455. You can also send us an email, will-talk@illinois.edu. Let me just very quickly, before going back to the phones here, ask another question about several times you've talked about, in a critical way, you've talked about career lawmakers. If you were elected, how long would you plan to serve?
I've signed an affidavit, sworn, written, signed affidavit, and it's on my website for the public that says I will not serve any more than two full four-year terms. I think our biggest problem in Illinois politics is we don't have term limits. We have to, for the success of our state or the future of our state, we need to adopt term limits, reasonable term limits. The president of the United States has term limits. There's a reason for that. And my maximum is 2 4-year terms. Whether that's the magical number, I think the people should decide that. But lawmakers have shown over and over again, career politicians, that they cannot just stay for two terms. And we talked about a Republican earlier that broke a promise to the state. I just can't express how much I believe that would help our state. And the system is designed to cause them, because the pensions for our lawmakers go up the longer they stay in office. They have an incentive, a conflict of interest, to stay as long as they can to get that big pension, the multi-million-dollar pension.
Well, let's go to some other callers. Back here, somebody in Urbana, line number one. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. Thank you for letting us have this chance to hear the perspective of candidates. I just have something to say. Mr. Flora, you say the state, Dr. Flora, you say the state is bankrupt, that there's too many social programs, and now there has to be cuts in funding. And you suggest cutting basic medical care for our most needy neighbors and pensions for our young people trying to make a living, working hard, just trying to get their foot in the world where they could have a little stability. You state that people are taking advantage of social services. I just want to let you know, as a citizen of Illinois, that I'm highly offended by your extremely unsubstantiated decision to blame the suffering people of our state for our state's deficit, and your commitment to both cut support for the people of Illinois and to paint them as greedy and undeserving of care from the state. Illinois does not need to eliminate government to get stronger. What it needs is to eliminate people like you from governmental positions and places of power to speak to the needs of our people. That's what we need to get stronger. Thank you.
Sure. You and I disagree.
We'll go on. Let's talk to another caller. This is somebody in Champaign. Hello.
Hi, line two?
Yes.
I can sort of counteract the last caller, because I recently attended a seminar, and the host will remain nameless, which spent a whole afternoon informing people how to disguise or transfer their assets so they would become eligible for Medicaid, especially in a nursing home situation. I don't know if your speaker is aware that that's a relatively common practice, but one of the examples that was given was a couple that had an estate of $700,000 who managed to become eligible for Medicaid by transferring those assets to trusts and putting them in the names of children and so forth. I wonder what your speaker thinks of that.
Well, I'm extremely familiar with those schemes and scenarios. So I think that's, again, part of our problem. That's part of the fraudulent activity that goes on in our state today to shift the burden to the state of Illinois when, in fact, people shouldn't be covered by the state of Illinois. And it invokes some inflammatory responses, you can see there, but I'm not talking about taking away health care or any other benefits for needy people, but I sure think we need to look at all possible solutions, and one of them is cut off these schemes where there people are transferring funds and then avoiding being caught, and then the state pays the bill.
Well, that raises the question, I suppose, and it's something that is going to be a growing problem as the number of older people increase. How do we meet the need for long-term care? And do you think that that should be completely an individual family's or couple's responsibility? And, you know, if that means spending everything they've saved in their lifetime to take care of one of them, well, so be it.
Well, now you're getting into the federal Medicare program, okay? Because after you reach 65 or 62, depending on what your age and your disabilities are, you then become qualified for the federal program known as Medicare.
But that doesn't pay the cost of long-term custodial care.
No, it doesn't. I think you got to go to a means testing, okay? For example, right now my mother has cancer. She's at home. She's got bladder cancer, okay? She doesn't want to go to a nursing home. But she's got a lot of assets, too. She owns several hundred acres of property. But to have the state pay her bills would be improper and unethical on my part, I think. You know, but we pay, because we're capable of paying, we pay for the nursing care. And we're paying nurses to go in to provide care so she doesn't have to go to a nursing home, although she would qualify for a nursing home. Now, I think we need to look at the situation, and if people can't afford it, then maybe the state needs to help out. But if someone like me, whose mother is 87 and has bladder cancer and a history of breast cancer, can't afford it, well then, maybe that's something that, rather than letting my mom shift all of her assets to me, maybe we have to say, well, Mrs. Plura, you know, you're not going to qualify. You're going to have to pay your own, which she is doing. And I don't see any problem in that at all. I don't. I don't think the society should be paying for my mom's medical care, home care or otherwise, if I decide to put her in a nursing home.
So how do you draw that line, though?
We got to have – this gets back to means testing. This gets back to Democrats and Republicans sitting down and coming up with a realistic view of what can we cover, how much will it cost, and what society should cover. You know, 75% of all of our health care is provided in the last 6 months of life, okay, 75% of the dollar spent today. And so I think we need to better educate people on, do we want — my mother, as an example, opted out of having any surgery for her cancer. She's 87. What's the point? And I think educating — she's a nurse, she knows that — but we need to educate society to say, well, you know, do we want to spend that effort and money to get an extra? We got to look at quality of life, not just days on earth.
We have another call here. Again, this is Urbana, line number one. Hello.
Hello. I just wanted to raise the issue that that the Medicaid program is a block grant program, and that the state doesn't pay 100% of the expenses, that the federal government pays a substantial part of the expenses, and also there are local sources of funding that in the Medicaid program, like from the healthcare providers and hospital bed tax and local government sources, that the federal government matches. And so this what the state actually pays is like about 35% of the total Medicaid costs in the state of Illinois. And so sometimes when people talk about Medicaid costs, which the total in Illinois is about $13.5 billion, that the state is spending all that money as a result of these discussions. But in fact, the state spending on Medicaid program is closer to $4.5 billion. And so I thought I'd hang up and listen to your response. Thank you.
Sure. I'm really, really glad you brought that up. I often hear this, and I can't for the life of me understand where people get this concept that the federal government has this big bucket of money that they that comes from magic, and that they step in to rescue the states. The federal government gets its money from the citizens in the United States, all of them, including Illinois. So when you say, well, the state doesn't have to pay this, the federal government is, well, the federal government is getting the money from the citizens in the states. So it's a circuitous argument to say, well, we don't have to worry because the federal government's going to step in. The federal government is out of money just like we are with these social programs. For example, this Obamacare is going to add over a million, some people estimate 2 million people, to our Medicaid obligation here in the state. And there's just no money to fund that program. It's going to give extra, it alleges to give extra benefits as well. And but there's no funding for the program. So to say that, well, don't worry because the federal government will step in, the federal government gets the money from the people in Illinois and in Missouri and every place else.
We're coming to the point where we have about 7-8 minutes left, and I wanted to try to get us in at least in a couple of other areas.
Sure.
Before we end up out of time. I want to talk a little bit about education. Would you make any major changes in state funding for education?
Well, I think we have to look at some cuts there. I think it's odd that, you know, when Senator Brady was running for governor, he proposed 10% cuts across the board, and he was belittled and demonized for suggesting such a thing. Even Republicans, one of our retired governors said, well, that's a naive view. Now, last week, Governor Quinn is proposing 9% cuts across the board. Substantially the same.
Not for schools, though.
But not for schools. And I find that odd because I don't know why schools would be exempt. That and my point is I'm all for education. I was raised in Leroy, went to Leroy High School, then on to the University of Illinois College of Medicine and College of Law. I'm big on education. But I think we have to look at ways to cut our education costs. And like it or not, I think we have to critically analyze that. And that means whether that is, can we get by with less? And I talk about, you know, the regional superintendents. Can we do without that particular expense?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, this was something that the governor proposed to get rid of the regional superintendents. It proved very controversial. So you think that actually was a good idea?
Well, I think that we have to look at that, absolutely. But mm-hmm. to say we can expand, expenses in our education program when we don't have any money, mm-hmm. and we've got oodles of bills that we haven't already paid, and to say education is off the table, it's a holy grail, I say no. I think what we need to do is start looking at some of the things in education where lawmakers have passed unfunded mandates. And we go back to this business of requiring education for our teachers on diabetes. That's why we have doctors. We don't want our teachers getting individual diabetes training. That all has a cost, or whether it's anything else, bloodborne pathogens. You know, we have to look at our transportation costs, everything
what
is on the table.
The governor, I think one of the things that he's talked about as a potential for saving a lot of money would be to persuade, I don't know if he actually used the word coerce or require, but persuade districts to consolidate.
No, I think that the less involvement that the state has in telling local communities how to educate their kids, the better, in my view. Mm-hmm. if communities want to consolidate, for example, Farmer City Mansfield is in my district. If Farmer City Mansfield wanted to consolidate with Leroy and the two communities got together, or they want to consolidate with Muhammad or whatever it is, then those local communities should decide that, not the state of Illinois or Governor Quinn making the decision that we're going to force this upon you. I think I'm all for consolidation if it's locally decided by the various districts. I'm against it if the state wants to force it on us.
What do you think about the legislative scholarships? Should they be continued or gotten rid of?
It's ridiculous. You know, we've got politicians, and the first question, even when somebody says, well, I'm against that, is go look if they have received a campaign finance donation from somebody that they have awarded a scholarship to. And if you looked at that, like I have, there'd be a lot of purple noses. If every politician's nose turned purple if they gave a scholarship to somebody that they'd received a campaign donation from, we'd have a lot of purple noses. And it's wrong. It's unethical. It's improper. Shouldn't be allowed.
What do you think about the ban on cell phone use while people are driving? Would you vote for that?
I would oppose that. I think there are plenty of ways in technology now these days to develop some type of system that'll make it safer. But the less the federal government and the state government is involved in mandating certain things upon us as citizens, the better. So I'm against that.
One of the things that has been a matter of debate, and it's kind of gone away for a while, but maybe it will come back in Springfield, is the expansion of gambling. The people in Chicago want a casino. I think the people in Danville would like to have one, too. I guess there's the idea that it's possible that might bring in a little bit of revenue to the state. What do you think about expanded gambling?
I'm definitely opposed to that. There hadn't been a single study show that a state can gamble itself out of debt. And gambling, in my view, preys on those individuals least able to afford it, least able to stop their addiction. I bring up Randy Bowman was my high school football coach and a well-known individual from Muhammad, taught 30-plus years. He was a teacher and driver's ed teacher as well. Died destitute because he had a gambling addiction. And I'm against it. I have no qualms about saying people say it'll bring jobs to the community. That's like saying building a crack house or building a methamphetamine drug distribution center will bring jobs to the community. I don't think we need those kind of jobs.
Should people in Illinois have the right to carry concealed firearm?
Absolutely. I'm a 35-year life member of the NRA. This is one of our dead last issues that we have. There's absolutely no reason why we should not be able to carry a licensed weapon. Law-abiding citizens should have the right to apply for a concealed carry permit.
The mayor of Chicago, Rahm Emanuel, has called for a statewide gun registration. It is required, apparently, in the city of Chicago.
I am sick and tired of Chicago politicians trying to mandate what happens statewide. If they want to do something up in Chicago, that's fine. But I've had it with those Chicago politicians trying to shove stuff down our throats down here and downstate.
Governor has proposed an end to the state tax on natural gas. Last year, the tax brought in $159 million. Apparently, this would save your average homeowner $35, $40. Would you vote for that?
I really don't know a whole lot about it. I've heard that. The governor's floating that idea. I profess ignorance on that issue, and I would like time to research it. That's about all I could say on it.
What about the business climate in the state? What could be done to improve it?
We need to improve our business climate by less regulation, less government intervention, less bureaucracy. I think that's the key to turning around our state. And our state is a quagmire of bureaucratic agencies that tries to force itself upon small business owners. Small business owners, and I could give you many examples. We don't have time for that, but they are truly what makes our economy go, and we're going to overregulate them and overtax them to death. On my website, I've got a issues video. If you go to my website, you'll see issues videos on that very subject.
Well, we have maybe about a minute or so left. Anything that I did not ask, did not come up, that you'd like to have a chance to tell people about?
I am about the most atypical person that would ever consider running for office. But I have decided to get involved because I'm fed up with what's going on in our state. And I know that we can do better than what we're doing. It all goes back to our career politicians, in my opinion. We need term limits. If we could do one thing, it would be adopt term limits, reasonable term limits, so we get rid of the career nature of our career politicians. I'm adamant on that issue.
Well, at that point, we're just about having to finish up this time around. Our guest, Tom Plura, is a Republican candidate. He's running in the new 51st Senate District here in the state of Illinois in the March primary. And Chapin Rose will be his opponent in the primary, and he will be on this program on March 15th. So you will have the opportunity to talk with him. We're having a number of candidates who are running in the primary. We'll also be talking with some people who are in the congressional primaries and give you a chance to call in and ask some questions. Thanks very much.
Thank you for having me.
We appreciate it.